So tonight, kind of a heavy topic. I'm going to talk about mortality and death. bit of a heavy topic. And the reason this is on my mind is I've been looking in the past few weeks at Halloween decorations and really kind of struck by what I would almost call a cartoonish take on death. You know, skeletons doing various, you know, jaunty activities, walking skeleton dogs, this sort of thing, you know, ghouls with scary faces, tombstones that say beware, you know, all this. And it really struck me this year how different that kind of energy is from, you know, for those of us who have actually lost somebody, you know, going through the real loss of somebody. It's a very different energy than that kind of jokey, happy sort of Halloween energy, you know, and just such a striking difference, you know, the Halloween's tombstone that says beware versus the experience of actually standing in front of the tombstone of someone you love and care about. You know, it's just, it's such a different experience. I often say that we live in a society that denies death, that lives, you know, has tremendous denial around it. You know, once a year drags out all this imagery and has this kind of cartoonish look at it and then puts it away and doesn't think about it at all, that sort of thing. You know, and it's funny because we live in a time of such a triumph of modern medicine. Most people do live until their 70s, 80s, and 90s, you know. There's a long life expectancy, at least in America and the West. You know, and if people from other places and times, even just a couple hundred years ago, you know, a couple hundred years ago, if you made it to 40, you were doing it okay, you know. If people then could see us, they think, wow, those people must be so grateful. You know, they can, you know, there's so few diseases and they can live so long, you know. And it's shocking that how easily we take things for granted, you know. And I often say that taking something for granted is it's really kind of an effective strategy for minimizing the joy and maximizing the suffering you get out of something. You know, if I take something, say a physical object, for granted, I'm not appreciating it at all. I'm getting zero joy out of it while I have it. And then when I lose it or it breaks or something like that, then I regret it, you know? You know, that's just with a physical object. And then, of course, with a person, you know, then there's the added complexity of the other person feeling taken for granted, you know, all that. So, and of course, the antidote for taking something for granted is fierce attention to what is. And so mortality and the image of mortality, it's so important in the spiritual traditions. You know, the Buddha's journey, Prince Siddhartha's journey, really began when he had that first awareness of death. And right after that, he set forth on the journey that would, you know, eventually he would become the Buddha. And I think when we actually start to contemplate mortality, when we start to, you know, get over the creepiness of it and really start to look at it, there are tremendous gifts that come with the awareness of our mortality. You know, for example, often in a meditation retreat, they'll do an exercise and say, you know, pretend an angel appeared to you and told you at the end of this week, someone you care about will die. You know, and just imagine during that week how you would treat all the people you care about. You know, you certainly would not be picking petty fights over anything. You know, you'd be showing such caring, such concern. You'd make absolutely sure that everyone knew exactly how much you cared about them. You know, you'd be in such a heartful, open place toward everyone. And, you know, of course, there is no angel that's, you know, showing up as a hitman, you know, threatening anyone we love. But the question is, why aren't we like that with the people we love all the time? You know, the truth of life is that, you know, odds are we all have decades ahead of us, you know, in terms of probability, but it's not guaranteed, you know, and it's the nature of life. It's so fragile. None of us knows when we wake up if that is our last day. You know, none of us knows if in any conversation, if that's the last time I'll have a conversation or an interaction with that person, you know. And just to have that awareness of the preciousness of life, the absolute irreplaceable preciousness of each moment of connection, each moment of intimacy, and really to honor that in a way, you know, even if it, this is the last time I'm having this experience, I'm going to be here fully in this experience and bring the best of myself to it, you know. And so certainly it, you know, it adds, just that awareness can add tremendous caring and a tremendous, you know, really highlighting the preciousness of all our deep connections. Now, similarly, you could imagine the angel appearing to you, say, before you went into the grocery store. You know, you're going to be with a bunch of strangers in the grocery store. And what if the angel told you sometime before the end of the week, someone in that store is going to die? You know, a stranger to you. Again, you probably wouldn't be out of your way rude to somebody, you know. You'd probably have a little bit of extra patience with whatever foibles people had, you know, fumbling with whatever, you know, in line in front of you or something like that. And again, the truth is, we walk into a grocery store, we don't know everyone's situation. We don't know what health things they're carrying. And we don't really know whether it could be the last week of somebody's life, you know, unbeknownst to them even. You know, and so it's just to see, to walk around seeing mortality and appreciating that in everyone, it really deepens a kind of compassion and tenderness. You know, one of the core Buddhist texts, the Dhammapada, says, people forget that their lives soon end. For those who do, quarrels come to an end, you know. You know, what is really the point of, you know, having a quarrel about some kind of, you know, this point or that point in the light of death? Another aspect of mortality that is very powerful is the kind of focus it puts on our spiritual growth. And it's, you know, the, how can I say, because medicine is so good and because many people do live to be old, we live in this kind of plausible deniability of, oh, I don't have to take care of this now, I can do it later, you know, this sort of thing. The game of, you know, I don't have to be the very best I can be right now. You know, I can work up to that. I have time, you know. And how can I say? Death brings a kind of urgency to it. Death, in a way, you know, forces the question, you know, if I'm really saying no to some aspect of my spiritual growth right now, essentially I'm saying no to some portion of the best of myself right now. And am I willing, in the great scheme of things, to leave some portion of the best of myself on the table and walk away from it in this life? You know? And so it's a, you know, it's a powerful question. It's you know, it in some ways, you know, whatever neuroses or fears or whatever we have around our spiritual growth and you know, making that next step or crossing that next threshold, you know, it takes a very different character to visualize, you know, what would it feel like to be on my deathbed knowing that I didn't take that next step, you know? Another aspect of mortality, really, and this is much more in a Jungian perspective. I've talked many times about Jung in particular talked about the cast of others that we have inside of us. That ego is one voice, one personality among many within the psyche. And of course, all the places that we have othered, I don't want to feel that, et cetera, those are places which are quote unquote dead in the psyche. And I think a lot of the dread of mortality and the dread of death comes from the dread of, feeling I'm not fully alive right now. And the miracle of the psyche, of course, is that we can, there's infinite possibility for resurrection within us. All it takes is attention and love and caring and all that. And all these places can be awakened within us and revitalized within us. Of course, probably the first articulation will be pain and discomfort as something wakes up. But when we're really alive, when we're really living fully, death takes on another quality. It's not a threat in the same way. There's this way that the soul really longs to be satisfied with its experience here, And if I taste life fully here, then whatever comes next, I'm fine with that. And it's much more the impoverished ego mind, which, can't get enough, and fear's running out, that sort of thing. So I'll share the quote sheet in the chat. So first of all, the Zoomies will get access to the quote sheet. Mm-hmm. And folks in the room at least will see it projected. So from the Dhammapada, I mentioned this quote already, the fundamental Buddhist canon is called the Triptika, the Pali canon. It is, it would take a small bookshelf to hold everything in the Pali canon. And of course, all of it starts with the Buddha said, and if the Buddha said all of that, he probably would have had to live 500 years. But among those writings, the Dhammapada has a special place. It's really seen by Buddhist scholars as probably encapsulating the actual words of the historical Buddha. And it's a lovely short text that I highly recommend if you've never read it. Very simply, I quoted this before, people forget that their lives will soon end. For those who remember, quarrels come to an end. All kinds of pettiness stops when we remember that our lives don't go on forever. Marcus Aurelius says, "Your days are numbered. Use them to throw open the windows of your soul to the sun. If you do not, the sun will soon set, and you with it." Rumi said, "I learned that every mortal will taste death, but only some will taste life." Sir Francis Bacon, extraordinary individual, said, "Death is a friend of ours, and the one that is not ready to entertain this friend is not at home." Very powerful. Ian Forrester says, "Death destroys a man, but the idea of death saves him." Heidegger said, "If I take death into my life, acknowledge it, and face it squarely, I will free myself from the anxiety of death and the pettiness of life. And only then will I be free to become myself." Henry Miller said, "When you are convinced that all the exits are blocked, either you take to believing in miracles or you stand still like the hummingbird. The miracle is that the honey is always there, right under your nose. You are only too busy searching everywhere else to realize it. The worst is not death, but being blind to the fact that everything about life is in the nature of the miraculous." Dag Hammarskjöld said, in the last analysis, "It is our conception of death which decides are answers to all the questions that life puts to us, all the important questions at any rate. Anais Nin said, people living deeply have no fear of death. Norman Cousins says, death is not the greatest loss in life. The greatest loss in life is what dies inside us while we live. Psychologist Leo Buscaglia says, death is a challenge. It tells us not to waste time. It tells us to tell each other right now that we love each other. Zen master Soko Morinaga said, without staring death in the eyes as the perpetual reverse side of life, we cannot live fully and completely. From the Carlos Castaneda writings, death is our eternal companion. It is always to our left at an arm's length. It has always been watching you. It always will until the day it taps you. The thing to do when you're impatient is to turn to your left and ask advice from death. An immense amount of pettiness is dropped if your death makes a gesture toward you, or you catch a glimpse of it, or you just catch the feeling that your companion is there watching you. Osho said, the real question is not whether life exists after death. The real question is whether you are alive before death. Anthony DeMello said, one of your American authors put it so well. He said, the awakening is the death of your belief in injustice and tragedy. The end of the world for a caterpillar is a butterfly for the master. Death is resurrection. We're not talking about some resurrection that will happen, but one that is happening right now. If you would die to the past, if you would die to every minute, you would be the person who is fully alive, because a fully alive person is one who is full of death. We're always dying to things. We're always shedding everything in order to be fully alive and resurrected at every moment. The mystics, the saints, and others make great efforts to wake people up. Sagyal Rinpoche said, perhaps the deepest reason we are afraid of death is because we do not know who we are. We believe in a personal, unique, and separate identity, but if we dare to examine it, we find this identity depends on an endless collection of things to prop it up. With our familiar props, we are faced with just ourselves, a person we do not know, an unnerving stranger with whom we have been living all the time, but we never really wanted to meet. Isn't that why we have tried to fill every moment of time with noise and activity, how boring or trivial, to ensure that we are never left in silence with this stranger on our own? Wow. Jack Kornfield says quite simply, the trouble is that you think you have time. Eckhart Tolle said, death is a stripping away of all that is not you. The secret of life is to die before you die and find that there is no death. Don Miguel Ruiz says, death is not the biggest fear we have. Our biggest fear is taking the risk to be alive, the risk to be alive and express who we really are. David White tells a story. He said, my good sister Jane, who's a nurse and who has sat by the deathbed of the dying for years, she always says, it's not what they did that they regret, but what they didn't do. The way they weren't generous. The way they didn't give what they could have given when they could have given it. And at this end time, when everything's being taken away anyway, they realize in a sense how ridiculous it was to hold on to something that would have been given in the end anyway. To give it voluntarily, to give it generously, to give it in the right moment when it's asked for, when the tide is right, to be present, to give it away and then turn away to be happy in having given. Anne Klein said, recognizing mortality means we are ready to see what is true. Seeing what is true is grounding. It brings us to the present. And finally, Elizabeth Mattis Namguel says, I have a personal koan. How do we live a life we can't hold on to? How do we live with the fact that the moment we're born, we're closer to death? The fact that when we fall in love, we sign up for grief. How do we reconcile that gain always ends in loss, gathering in separation.